Recorded live in Petone, New Zealand, this is the Cinematica Podcast, your weekly guide to what's on at the movies. You can find this and all of the other episodes of the show at cinematica.co.nz. Welcome everybody to Season 5, Episode number 3 of Cinematica. My name is Dan Slevin, and here with me in the Cinematica studio, back from the dead, is...
Hello everybody, I'm back, roaring and back into business.
You got all your bits?
Yeah, they're all...
In working order?
I wouldn't say I'm 100% tip-top shape, but I'm back.
Well, it's really good to see you, and it's good to have here. The whole crew back together and on the far side of the table, studying... Her script and not listening to me is
Kaylee.
Hi, glad to have you here too.
Yep.
In today's episode of the show, Tom Hanks fights off Somali pirates in the true story Captain Phillips. Kerry Russell searches for Mr. Darcy in Austin Land, and Domhnall Gleeson and Bill Nighy travel in time in Richard. Did I pronounce that right? You looked at me like I may not have.
No, I was just saying that's a strange name.
Well, he's Irish. Although he isn't very Irish
Domhnall.
On screen.
Domhnall.
Yeah. Is he the son of...
He is.
Okay, good.
But he is. Only I read that the other day.
Brendan Gleeson, right?
Yeah.
They don't look alike. Or maybe he will in another 40 years' time.
He's got the same hair colour.
True.
Narrows it down.
Mind you, I can't not think of Brendan Gleeson as a goose now. We must find out from Tuckett whether he liked the Smurfs. That's still an outstanding question from a past episode.
Isn't he a Smurfs man? He looks like a Smurfs man to me. Yeah, we can imagine him all blue with the white nappy.
Yeah,
they're not nappies; they're pants.
Oh,
they wear pants.
Are they? I mean, they look like big nappies to me, but they're not. Are they?
No,
they're very childlike, and that's the whole idea, isn't it? Come on, they're nappies.
They're European, they're white pants.
Yeah.
In the school holiday special edition of the show, Graham Tuckett was on, and we persuaded him to go and see the Smurfs, but we have yet to get a report back.
Come on, Graham.
Before we get into the main body of the show, it's time to check out the mailbag. We will have got some of your two-word reviews, no doubt.
Mm-hmm. Fred Thompson said his two-word review for Captain Phillips is gripping intensity. Final hour had me on the edge of my seat, although I knew the outcome.
Good stuff.
We got two from TinRibs27. New term of the day, we need to get him to Costa Rica-ness, from Dan on Cinematica. That was last week. And his two-word review of Mr. Pip is expectations unmet.
Ooh. It's nice to see that people are going, though. You know, even if perhaps they're a little bit disappointed, checking out New Zealand films in the current environment is a very important thing to do.
Mm-hmm. And Robert Caddo tweeted, "Nice to hear Kaylee's comments on Golden Age Sydney here in Surrey Hills in this week's Cinematica podcast." And Dan, for this special Alan Partridge tour review, I'm going to pass it to you.
Okay. So I've been asked to see if I can...
You're the token British representative.
Here we go. So according to the Mirka... Now, I'm not sure if this is exactly what he means, because that does look like just a really solid amount of laughter. Ah-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha.
But it starts with the...
Yes, so I will try. I'll try my... my knowing me, Alan Partridge, knowing you, Cinematica, aha. So there we go.
That's pretty, not bad.
It's not too bad, is it? But of course, the real thing is going to hit our screens here in New Zealand in December, still a whole month to go. The Mirka, who's a long-time listener and regular contributor to Cinematica, was in Melbourne this weekend, because it's not often that I'm envious of Australia, but they have got Alan Partridge first, which is just not fair.
And he'll probably go there too.
Yeah, he would have.
They always get the talent.
They do. They get the visits. But anyway, Simon and I have actually seen the Alan Partridge film. We've seen it once, which is not enough. That's, I do believe that watching it a second time come Christmas time will be very much the thing. So
Early December it comes out.
Early December, yeah.
It's good, good running.
Up against The Hobbit. You could probably see Alan Partridge twice, like at the same time as other people watching The Hobbit once.
Yes, you could.
It's about the right length, isn't it? You could fit two sessions in.
And you're going to laugh just as much the second time as the first.
Yes, exactly. Well, we shall be featuring it on the show, no doubt, when it arrives. But in the meantime, Kaylee, what have people been going to see this weekend?
Dun, 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 dun,
the horrific, dun. The horrific news out of the US was that Bad Grandpa is Jackass's Bad Grandpa is the number one film in the US.
I know,
which means that we're all going to hell.
It's killing it on Rotten Tomatoes, but The Counselor is floundering a bit.
Yes, some very, very mixed.
I think it's going to be great.
The Counselor?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
It's got all those great-looking people in it. Good-looking people.
It has got good-looking people in it, hasn't it? I don't know, how long before Bad Grandmother?
Look, it's...
Bad Grandma.
It's inevitable. It is inevitable.
Outrageous Uncle.
Yeah, I mean, it's those Jackass people. They've just... it's licensed to print money, those sorts of things. You know how I feel about people who criticise films that they haven't seen, but I am going to say that I just hate that rubbish.
You don't want to prejudge these.
No,
things,
absolutely. With don't let me.
But don't. I'm not
steer you away won't. From it if it's something that you're into. But yeah. By God, it's going
to
be painful.
But
for
you
me.
Have to go and see it. I'm not. Okay.
Yeah, I watched the last Jackass film, which was in 3D, and it had like a couple of funny moments, but most of it was just awful.
Mm. Mm. Counselor will be interesting. You're right. It will be, I reckon. Mm. It's
got all the right people in it.
It's got all the right people.
Mm. How can you go wrong with Fassbender? I mean, even though Prometheus was ridiculous, he was great in it.
And it has got the right sort of support, you know,
and
the right pedigree making it.
It's got amazing Javier Bardem hair.
Mm.
You know, that's the thing.
Stuck in the weirder, the weirder his hair.
I want his hair. It's awesome.
It's amazing.
Call it.
So what have people been watching this weekend? In New Zealand.
In New Zealand.
Call it.
In the number 5 position, down from 2, is Prisoners, opening at 4, About Time.
Only 4? Even with the sneaks, the long weekend, the weekend before, I would have thought that would have been higher.
Mm.
Where are all the romantics?
They are climbing Everest, because Beyond the Edge is at number 3.
Mm.
Number 2 is Gravity, still holding on in that top position. And number 1, Captain Phillips.
That's very good news. Mm. That's a sign that quality films are still...
I shouldn't be surprised, but I am.
No. Well, bearing in mind some of the history of the New Zealand box office this year, actually it was by no means guaranteed that film would do well in its first weekend. Mm. So, no, well done to all concerned.
I think all of them were a bit soft, though.
Really?
For that time of year. Yeah, for the long weekend.
It was good weather.
That kind of soft.
It was good weather.
Yeah, it was, but...
But it was weather that turned around at the last minute. It was supposed to be rainy, so you'd think maybe people wouldn't make plans.
That's true.
And I'm so over the wind.
It's back today, isn't it?
I think I may have flashed a bunch of people today in this wind. Sorry.
Yeah, so I just want to also apologise to listeners for this being radio. So you're going to have to use your imaginations there. Time to start talking about movies and dissecting the... offerings from the weekend. First up, it's Tom.
This is Mask, Alabama.
We are an unarmed freighter. We have a potential piracy situation.
Copy, Alabama. You should alert your crew. Get your fire hoses ready. Chances are it's just fishermen.
They're not here to fish.
Listen up. We have been boarded by armed pirates. Stay hidden at all costs. No one any hostages.
Where is the crew?
I don't know.
You think we're playing? You think we're playing?
No. You're going to shoot somebody.
Look at me.
Sure.
Look at me. I'm the captain now.
God, blimey. Captain Phillips, Tom Hanks, and our maritime safety reporter in the corner.
Well, it wasn't long ago I got on the ferry and took the trip across the strait. So I think I'm qualified.
Exactly.
I can say categorically that there were no pirates attacking and they didn't have to get
No sounds pirates
coming. Which, when you look at the size, it's actually refreshing to think how big the ferry is, and yet it would pale in comparison to these freighters. How on earth these guys got up there is a miracle, really.
It is amazing. and not only that, but how few people it takes to actually run one of those ships. Just a relatively small crew for the size of them. And just amazing engineering. For the first third of the film, you know, which it's like one of those great sort of men at work documentaries, you know, and you're thinking, like, you're going backwards and forwards between Tom Hanks and his crew on the ship and the Somali pirates preparing for their expedition, and yeah. you're going backwards and forwards between them, and you sort of, it's a really interesting contrast between two sets of guys basically who are have got a job to do one way or another, and those jobs are going to
the consequences collide, though yeah. for the young Somali men are pretty significant if they don't come back with something, isn't it? Like it's made quite clear that they have to come back with the goods.
Exactly.
And it's such a barren kind of distressing environment that this is the only opportunity that these guys have got, really. And I mean, it's a funny film because it starts off like at a very gentle pace, doesn't it? Where he's just, I mean, Catherine Kinnear's in it for a very brief time, but she's, you know, always lovely. But she, excuse me, but the whole sort of, they just, husband and wife, kids have left, and they're just kind of off to their jobs, and drops him off, and off he goes, you know, and it's for how many
months? He might as well be carrying his lunchbox.
Yeah. It was, and you're right, like it really delves right into the mechanics of the whole process, but it also highlights their concerns right from the outset, doesn't it? And that strip of water that they go through, which has had a history at that time of piracy, they go further out and do things like that, don't they? Mm. And it's fascinating when the actual when the attempt to take the ship is made, how tense it is, how drawn out it is, and how, you know, they're battling the elements as well as trying to get onto this ship, and these guys trying to repulse them. It's a really, really tense, sort of fraught film.
It's gripping, and the moment these two sides come into conflict, it really is edge of your seat stuff right from there on. We know for Paul Greengrass, the director from previous films, we know that he can create tension. We know he can do action. We know that he's got a facility for this. What I was really pleased about was the fact that he still manages to maintain the humanity of both sides of this conflict, and in no way does he demonize the pirates and to turn them into sort of stock Hollywood villains. There's no moustache twirling German accented supervillain sort of lurking in the background.
They're under enormous pressure, aren't they?
Exactly.
And it comes through loud and clear. They're under this constant pressure.
Mm.
And interestingly, those guys were all friends, and he was, I think, a taxi driver when they found him, the guy who plays the lead Somali.
Yeah, and apparently Minnesota or somewhere like that is the biggest Somali community outside of Africa, and that's sort of where the diaspora has ended up, so that's where they went to find them.
And you wouldn't know that they're first-time actors from that point of view at all. I mean, they really carry it off. They're really strong.
No, and when you're going up against somebody like Hanks, you know, who is still movie star, you know, one of the great movie stars that we have. I think it's fantastic that not only do they hold their own, but they sort of raised Hanks's game.
I thought so. Yeah, I mean, it's not all about. I mean, there's a big chunk of the film which is about how everything's going to be resolved, or how, you know, will it, won't it? But then there's a highlight after that, I think, in terms of Tom Hanks and his character and the way that he plays it. It's a really, really strong part of the film.
I wanted to mention that. Maybe we'll come back to that scene in a moment. I just want to go to Kaylee. You've seen it most recently, just last night. And what was your response to it?
I don't think
you got a bit weepy.
Weepy at the end. Tom Hanks is just so great. Like, he's just, you know, he's going through the film and then he just hits the stride and he's like, oh God, this is too real. This is too real, Tom Hanks.
Well, and which is a surprise because it's a long time, I think, since I've seen Hanks really, really be worthwhile, really be watchable. I walked out of Larry Crown 2 years ago thinking that was it. That was the last time, you know. Don't even bother, Tom. You know, your heart's not in it.
Mm.
But you can't say that his heart wasn't in this.
No, I was thinking of Castaway. It's just like, oh, the brilliance out at sea.
Mm. Yeah, true. It definitely does reflect back on that performance. And yeah, exactly. The scene, without giving away what happens in the scene, but there's a final scene in the sick bay, and Hanks is just... You know how, like, sometimes you have to wait till the very end of a film before you can really sum it up. Like, you can sort of be enjoying it while you're watching it, but it's only at the very end that you go, yeah, that was great. That scene, I reckon, takes this film from B plus to A.
Yeah, completely.
On its own. Yep. You know, that totally one scene agree. Just that, and so it really is, you can be enjoying it. You can be, you can sort of drift in and out, perhaps, as you sometimes do when you're watching a movie, but it pays not to make your mind up.
You see, well,
about the totality of it until you've got to the very end.
Because I've come across a bit of criticism of the film, and I think, you know, that relates back to the US kind of flexing its muscle and the military might and all that sort of thing. And that's, you know, kind of fair enough, I guess, but if the film had ended after that, I'd agree with them. But because it carries on and it's a really human ending to the film, I think that they've missed. I think so. That point.
I think you're true story.
Yeah. Exactly. And also, what were they supposed to do? You know,
Right.
You know, this is the whole point of having a military technology, a military resource like that, is that you protect your citizens, right? And you know, and just because. You know, what are they supposed... Yeah, I don't know what the alternative is.
I mean, and I found that just as mesmerising because it was this machine and it was so well oiled.
Well, it's another example of men at work, isn't it?
It was,
Professionals doing their job in the way that they're trained to do and
in a way, for me, it kind of summed up the futility of what these guys were trying to do, you know, that really the odds were so heavily against them that there was never going to be a healthy... Well, I mean, you know, that the outcomes weren't necessarily going to be good, were they? Yeah, so I thought that some of that criticism was a bit on the nose, really.
Yeah,
you know, when I saw that film, I couldn't, you know, it's a film, even though it's, you know, it has a long runtime, it doesn't feel long, and you could easily sit through it again.
Yeah, the only thing that I might say about it is that it does have Greengrass's traditional wobbly cam handheld.
Yeah, it made me a bit seasick.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. When you add that to the rolling seas and what have you, like, it's not
United 93.
It's not as
scary, scary and up and down as that.
It's a bit Bourne at times. Like Bourne had a lot more fast cutting. This one, I think, uses the camera like rather than cut necessarily, will use a fast pan to do something. But if you have a problem with motion sickness at modern films that use that sort of wobbly handheld camera, this may be an issue for you. Just a little warning, but I think it's worth persevering with, and it is worth giving it a crack, just because the performances and the script and the fact that it's so respectful of all of the parties concerned that it doesn't allow you to take sides as easily as perhaps a less thoughtful film would.
Yeah, there is no sort of bad guy in the room, and it's not that simple at all.
No, exactly. So, time to go around the table and see if we can try and sum this sucker up in two words.
I am going to go last because I have a public service announcement to make.
Okay.
With my new review.
All right. Okay, so Simon's looking puzzled at that. Are you ready for yours?
I'm short, you know, short notice, but I'm just going to go with Captain Courageous.
Okay. I'm going to say
Hanks is back. You're just butchering the English language. Getting all carried away.
Yep. It's my language. I can do what I like to it.
Good on you. I'm going to make some stuff up.
And my two-word review for Captain Phillips is Real Drama. Now, I just wanted to say, after my viewing of Captain Phillips last night, that talking through a film is not acceptable for anyone of any age, especially if you're talking at regular volume,
if
you're in a multiplex or if you're in a small cinema, everybody can hear you. It's disrespectful of your fellow audience members, and it's incredibly disrespectful towards the filmmaker who has made this film for your entertainment. Yes, you've paid for it, but so has everyone else. Please shut your trap.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. Too much talking.
Exactly. It's been precious few experiences recently where you could say that actually, you know, everybody has behaved themselves. Mm. Everybody in the audience has behaved themselves. It is becoming a real problem. And, you know, this is...
Social media, man.
Well, it's not social media.
Yes, it is.
It's,
they've always got
I blame...
They're tapped in right at the whole time.
I blame the schools.
Schools.
Myself.
I blame you know, they should have hearing aids. They don't. They talk loud. What?
Oh, well, certain audience categories.
Yeah, we've covered a lot of them, though.
I think basically we hate everybody
that makes noise in a theatre.
We should have
you see that thing about popcorn that apparently it distracts people from the ads.
From the ads?
Yeah, the ads aren't as effective if you're eating popcorn, like, yeah. Something like that, yeah.
We don't want ads to be effective at all.
I know. I'm just
because the more effective the ads are, the more we're going to have to sit through.
But what does it mean if you're eating popcorn during a movie? I mean, does it distract your?
Well, just on that subject, I've always thought that
your ability
who's
to focus.
For this research.
I look. It's some guy who's got a PhD on it.
Yeah. It'll be the popcorn people that are paying for it.
He'll have tenure. Life in academia now.
Now there are some theaters, right? That when they sell you an ice cream, it's scooped out and it's in a cone, and they might even dip it in the chocolate in front of you or what have you. And then there are some theaters that give you a little tub with a spoon in the lid, right? Mm. And just a trap.
I'm with you so far.
A trap for young players is when you go to see a subtitled movie and you get an ice cream and it's one of those tub ones, right? Because you have to take your eyes off the screen to get the spoon into the tub, mm-hmm. and then you look up and you've missed a bit. Mm. Right, so if you're going to go and see a subtitled movie, make sure you get your ice cream in the cone, because then you can.
Dan, how long have you been going to the movies?
I've been years of experience.
Shouldn't it be intuitive by now? You just know where your mouth is. You know where the thing is.
You just don't know where you're.
You don't have to look.
But you keep missing bits, don't you? Or you're scooping in the empty space.
You guys need it all before it defrosts.
I reckon you should have it down pat by now.
It all depends who the director is. If it's a Farhadi film, you're going to miss subtitles anyway because they go way too fast. You know.
All right. Anyway, if you've got any tips for us and for our listeners regarding more effective cinema going and more getting the best value out of your cinema going experience, I once went out with somebody who absolutely refused to sit and watch trailers. She hated trailers so much that she would go and stand in the corridor. Mm. She wouldn't mind the ads.
But
when the trailer started, she would go out and stand in the corridor and then come back when the lights went down, because she just absolutely didn't want to watch a film with any preconceptions at all.
No. Well, it does seem that it's getting to the point where you need an attendant to go through and ask people to be quiet during the film, which seems ridiculous because then it disrupts it for everyone. But
hold on a second. There are theatres in this very city where the most annoying thing is the attendant coming through in the middle.
I know, they come through.
Like, with the torch, waving the torch around. It's like, oh, please, go. It happened in the last 15 minutes or so of Prisoners the other night. You know, we're like super tense.
Are you sure it wasn't apart from the film where they're going, quick, follow me, with a torch? Like, wait a minute, this way, quick.
No, it was definitely somebody wearing a uniform, a cinema, not those natty, colourful waistcoats that they used to wear.
Do you think that's an Osh thing?
No, it's not an Osh thing. Oh, as in, because it used to be that for fire reasons you had to have an usher in the theatre at all times, and now that's why they have cameras, CCTV cameras, so that they can see what's going on. But I think it's actually to keep people's feet off the seats. That's what it is. Occasionally they'll sort of wave at somebody who's just draping their feet over the seats.
Yeah, they
in
do
front.
That at Event Queensgate. Halfway through the film, like, you see the lusher, like,
yeah, it's the same at Reading's, and it's so annoying.
I pity the guy who has to do it, or lady, you know, I mean,
make
it because they look really, really into it as well. They look like they're really
me to do that.
Anyway, moving right along. This week is the last week of Graham Mason's reign at the New Zealand Film Commission. He finishes on Friday before he takes over at Screen Australia, and which is a huge job. I interviewed him a week or so ago as a sort of summing up of his time, his more than 6 years, 5 or 6 years here at the New Zealand Film Commission. This interview was actually done for another outlet, but seeing as that other outlet doesn't feel like paying me at the moment, I thought I would just not give it to them. And
Sharesies.
Yeah, exactly. So Cinematica first.
We're pirates of the airwaves.
The whole thing is about half an hour, and we'll make that available as a Cinematica extra a little bit later on in the week. But here's a 4 and a bit minute extract from the interview with Graham Mason. And I chose this clip because it'll give you a really interesting idea about what the Film Commission does and the volume of work that goes on behind the scenes at somewhere like the Film Commission that we would never see, because, you know, quite often as cinema goers, we'll see their logo on the front of three or four films a year, but we don't really understand quite what goes into the background of it. So this will give you a bit of an idea. Graham Mason from the New Zealand Film Commission.
I think so many people are so stretched doing so much stuff.
Mm.
I mean, that's you, it's crew, it's producers, it's us. I mean, I've actually never seen an industry trying to do so much with so few people and so little resource. And I don't mean that negatively against government or anyone else, because it's well-resourced per capita.
Mm.
It's just, I think, there's this incredible desire, hope, and slightly, you know, expectation.
Mm.
And I think, you know, it's like your publisher thinks that you will just put a whole magazine together without having been paid, but guess what? You did.
Mm. Yeah. That's right. I know.
It's like I look at it and I go, we have for the next round of the EDF applications, you know, we used to get, say, 4 per meeting, say, mm. when I first started really looking at it. We have 20
this round.
Now, 20, now that involves, I know some people think the Film Commission's massively overstaffed and there should be 2 people, or what does everyone do, and don't whinge because at least, you know, you're getting paid, all of which is true.
Mm.
But, you know, with those 20 applications, and they're all in from real people with credits, it isn't like, you know, film school people, and all of those need to have a couple of people read them a couple of times. That's an application, a 5-page treatment and a script. And then we all get together and talk about it. Then we do calls and then we do notes. And normally it's follow-up meetings. And that's on the ones you say no to.
Mm.
Now that's phenomenal. It's like, and then if you add into it, you know, the ADFs and the seed developments, and it's like, oh my Lord. We have as many stuff coming in here as Screen Australia does.
Well, that was going to be a question that I was going to ask you, actually, and it was one I had scheduled for a little bit later on in the call, but we might as well get to it now. Is
yeah.
based on your knowledge of what they're doing, and of course, you know, your years here in New Zealand, how would you compare the two organisations, and what do you think? Are there things that you think that New Zealand can teach Screen Australia, what your experience here and vice versa?
I want to guess what I wouldn't be presumptuous enough to tell Screen Australia what to do yet. I haven't walked in the door. But for the Film Commission, I think one of the real key things for me is it is staggeringly fantastic that so many people want to be in our sector. But I think people often do lose sight of the sheer volume of people that now do want to be in our space, I mean, our collective industry space.
Yeah.
Screen Australia does have some differences. It works across film, television, gaming. It's involved in the sector as a whole, whereas the Film Commission only does that tangentially or on international stuff where we do look after large budget or SPIF. So that is a difference. I think, you know, one of the things that I think that, you know, that has given us in New Zealand, because we are so involved, there's a plus, you know, that we do have a pretty good steer on what is happening in the big end of town because we look after it, you know, the grants for MB.
Yeah.
But I think there is a real challenge for us in New Zealand that we haven't yet woken up to the idea that even to tell our local stories, which is what the Film Commission really exists for, to tell local stories or to encourage local people to tell the stories they want to tell.
Mm-hmm.
And they can be different things.
Indeed.
You know, so if Rob Saki, who I can just see walking across the office, wants to do a sci-fi western, that's great. We don't judge on what's on screen, you know, where it's set. We're much more interested in, you know, the talent and where they're from and how we can help them.
And here's Katie with the news.
Thanks, Dan. Speaking of Dan and his favorite actors, Gerard Butler, Aaron Eckhart, and Morgan Freeman have signed on to reprise their roles as Secret Service Man, President, and Speaker of the House in a non-awaited sequel to Olympus Has Fallen called, wait for it, London Has Fallen.
No. Brilliant. Genius.
Isn't it Skyfall?
Like, but isn't Gerard... I used to like Gerard Butler. You know? I used to, a few years ago. When, I can't remember the film now, but I liked
think he
it.
Just needs to settle down and have some kids and fade away.
Look, now, why is there not a sequel announced for White House Down, which was actually like a better film?
Yeah.
You know, that's... Get with it, Hollywood. That's a free idea. I'm giving you that free idea now.
No director has signed on yet, therefore there's no release date.
Yeah, it's basically the American film market is on at the moment, which is where a lot of these
terrible ideas come from.
Terrible ideas go to try and get gullible investors.
Oh, it's been a sad week for film fans, aside from that earlier announcement, as we mourn the passing of stuntman-turned-director Hal Needham from Smokey and the Bandit, or Nona from Smokey and the Bandit, at the age of 82, Antonia Bird, Ravenous and Priest, at the very young age of 62.
Yeah, it was not a great weekend for people passing. Hal Needham had cancer, so I think people knew that he was poorly, but Antonia Bird went very young and very unexpectedly. So that's she had a production company with Robert Carlyle, who she worked with regularly, and they were developing work together, which was so stuff that we will not see, unfortunately.
And New Zealand Film Festival goers may remember the brilliant documentary Marwan Call from the 2010 festival. It was about a man who loses his memory after a savage beating outside a bar and then channels his bewilderment, pain, and creativity into an amazing fictional world constructed from models and action figures. This week, it was announced that Robert Zemeckis, still best known for Back to the Future,
in my house anyway,
is planning a fictionalized version of the story.
Which I think could be really super interesting. So, yeah, that was probably the most... there's always pages and pages of announcements of people being cast and films being, sequels being greenlit and this, that, and the other. And that was probably the first one in a long while where I thought, you know what, that would be really interesting. And, even a failure would be an interesting failure, worth watching. So, yeah, keep your eyes peeled for that. Mm-hmm. Next on the show, this is a film that only I've seen, so we'll whip through it quick smart, but I've been to Austinland.
I'm not spying on you.
I'm afraid you caught me at an unladylike moment. Mrs. Wattlesbrook will probably rap my knuckles or something.
Tell me about it. So you hail from the former colonies? Yeah, I'm sorry, that's pretty bad. I'm not really here to do the ye olde stuff.
Oh, I'm probably not supposed to be talking to the servants anyway. Yeah, I'm definitely not supposed to talk to you.
And yet, here you are.
And, you're right over there.
I shouldn't have drank some water. And yet, here you are.
Yes, it self-consciously and with a wink in its eye, the romance of Austinland laid bare there in that particular clip. That was Kerry Russell as Jane Hayes, an American romantic who has been unlucky in love, who is obsessed, shall we say, with the world of Jane Austen and particularly Mr. Darcy, which she... that Pride and Prejudice with Colin Firth she watches over and over again, and rather foolishly also watches with dates. So, of course, they never quite measure up. She decides that to ease her broken heart, she will go to England, to merry old England, to go to a special sort of holiday camp, especially for people who love Jane Austen.
Jane Austen summer camp.
Yeah. And Jane Seymour plays Mrs. Wattlesbrook, who is a sort of former failed actress who runs this thing at a regency, a beautiful old regency house. And actors are employed to portray various Jane Austen types, so that the young women who go, they role play their way through the entire 2 weeks, you see, and it's meant to be humorous, and it sometimes is. And What can we say? Brett McKenzie plays the handyman. This is Keith Wellingtonian. Brett McKenzie plays the handyman slash sort of vet slash gardener, who is not part of the entertainment, but who Kerry Russell perhaps falls for anyway. And the comic relief is provided by Jennifer Coolidge. She was in all the American Pie movies.
Yes.
Oh, that's awesome.
That's right, yes. Mm. And it's in all of those. And
oh, she played that mother. Stifler's mother.
Stifler's mother, oh, that's right. A, and yeah, but also
just a guess, a wild
Napoleon
guess.
Dynamite and the other film by the Napoleon Dynamite dude, which is called...
Is there a sequel?
Not a sequel so much, but... oh, for Pete's sake... The internet's letting me down here. Anyway. The reason I mentioned Napoleon Dynamite is because that was made by Jared Hess, and his sister, Jerusha Hess, is the writer-director of Austin Land, and he is a producer on the film. So it's got a similar quirky quality to it, and lots of sort of quirky characters and quirky situations. Your tolerance for this may well be very... closely related to your love of Jane Austen, because I suspect a lot of the jokes are aimed at people who are also equally besotted with Mr. Darcy. I am not one of those people, but quite a few people in the audience with me very much fitted that category, and there was lots of delighted laughter from other quarters. So that's Austen Land. Brett McKenzie playing a suave Kiwi, suave Kiwi, doesn't even go together, does it? A suave Kiwi romantic lead that makes an interesting change of pace for him. Not much singing. Not no singing, but not much singing from him. And it's really nice to see Kerry Russell back on the big screen, a very appealing screen presence. So this is a film that I laughed a few times at. And probably will not remember much beyond Christmas, you know. Oh, but
so it was no waitress.
No waitress. No, and not with that, not with anything like that same level of depth. But it is a satisfying romance for those people who are into that sort of thing. Probably much more so than the film we're about to talk about next. In that regard,
what about the two words for it?
Well, two words for Austen Land. Yeah, no pressure. Two words for Austen Land would be crumbs.
That's a good word. Two words.
Austenaudacious.
No, it'll be tidy romance, really, because it's really just hits its romance buttons, and there's no great surprises in there.
Chick flick.
Pardon me?
Would you say it's a chick flick?
Oh yeah, very much so. Yeah, yeah. I'm not the target market for it in any way, shape, or form. I don't think that if I had enjoyed it more, I would have been surprised, to be honest. But talking of chick flicks, rom-coms, and the like, Richard Curtis is the king of them, so let's find out what he's been doing next.
Tim, my dear son, this is going to sound strange, but there's this family secret that the men in the family can travel in time.
This is such a weird joke.
It's not a joke.
If it's true, which it isn't.
Although it is.
But if it was, which it's not.
Which it is.
How would I actually...
You go into a dark place, clench your fists, think of the moment you're going to, and you'll find yourself there.
Try to live every day as if it was the final day of my extraordinary, ordinary life.
That's actually a clip from the American trailer, which is much better at giving you a flavour of the film as a whole than the one that we've been watching here, which really, you know, if you've just seen the trailer, you'll think that this is a traditional sort of Richard Curtis, American girl, slightly goofy English guy romantic comedy, which it isn't really. I'm going to throw over to our romantic comedy specialist, Kaylee Carruthers.
Thank you. from Richard Curtis. The trailer pretty much gives you the whole synopsis. After a New Year's party, Domhnall Gleeson is told by his father, who is amazing, Bill Nighy, that the men in their family can time travel. And so he decides to use his magical powers of time travel to get himself a girlfriend just played by...
As you do when you're 21.
As you do when you're 21. It's like, because, you know, what would make your life better? A girlfriend. So he ends up meeting a lovely American girl played by
Rachel McAdams.
Yeah. And they fall in love. And then, you know, life starts to get a little bit more complicated and he discovers that he can't time travel and fix everyone and everything. Sometimes you just have to deal with the drama of life. And it was so nice. As I said last week on the show, a little preview of it's just, if you want to watch something nice, go watch this. Because it's just so, like, soft and lovely. I mean, there are some sad bits. There's, you know, drama. But it's just so nice. It's such a nice film.
It is a nice film. There's a little bit that we just played there, which is from the end of the picture where he talks about learning how to live his extraordinary ordinary life. And I wanted to say, excuse me, pal, your life is not ordinary. You're a lawyer who grew up in a castle in Cornwall,
yes,
and your parents didn't have to work. So can we just like settle down a little bit on the ordinary part, because actually life's a little bit tougher for some people, but. He's a very likable, appealing young man. I'd never seen him before, and I think that he's got quite a future as a very relaxed, funny, but not sort of not trying too hard funny. And I thought that, you know, he held his own with Bill Nye, who is just a titanic, you know, just wonderful, wonderful. And not enough Bill Nye, probably, if I was to criticise the film. For me, it didn't feel to me ultimately as if it was about their romance at all, actually, that is a sort of way in to the story. But what it's really about is the relationship between a father and son, and the time travel is it's almost metaphoric, you know, that it's about, yeah, fathers and sons and relationships and learning lessons and seeing yourself recreated in front of you. And on that basis, you know, the stuff between Gleason and Nye, those scenes some of them were just really beautiful. And I could have done with a bit more of that. And I felt like Rachel McAdams' part was sort of underwritten. You know, she's there to provide a hook into a story, but she doesn't really have that much of her own to do. And yeah, I felt she was a bit undersold, really, unfortunately. But yeah, maybe that's okay, maybe that's forgivable.
I just really enjoyed it. This is one of those ones, it's like one of those sick day movies. It's like you see it in the theater and then you just know, it's like, I'm gonna watch this.
Are you a fan of Curtis's other films?
Oh,
are you an aficionado?
Totally. I'm not a huge Rant fan, so that sort of dampens
yeah,
you know, 90% of his work. But yeah, I do like his films, because it's just, you know, it's like fluff.
Yeah.
It's like Mallow Puff.
I wasn't a big Love Actually man.
Ah, oh, so kind great.
Of no, but that's, people. You've got to do that at Christmas. That's, yeah. That's now. That's
but
now
how does it rate next to that?
Oh, it's better, I think. Partly because Love Actually, because it's an ensemble piece, bits of it work better than others. Love Actually,
yeah.
Like, whereas this, it's like one of the relationships in Love Actually given a bit more sort of weight to it. So in that sense, it works better. It's not, you know, it's not Notting Hill.
No,
let's be honest.
Doesn't have Alan Rickman in it.
No, true. But it has Bill Nye, which is almost as good. So it's one of those films that I think as if you go in expecting a romantic comedy and your heart is open to the other stuff, you'll be really quite taken with it, which is what happened to me. You know, I thought that there was some lovely moments in it, but then there were some that just landed really flat for me, or that they were a bit sort of comedy try hard. It felt to me like the funny stuff wasn't as funny as earlier Richard Curtis films, but actually the emotional stuff was perhaps more emotional, so yeah, maybe that's good enough these days.
Did he write on The Young Ones?
I think he was a co-writer on The Young Ones and Blackadder.
Do you remember what SPG stood for?
SPG?
Yeah, little guinea pig.
Special Patrol Group.
Special Patrol Group.
Yeah. Which was the particularly, it was like the Armed Defenders Squad.
That's right.
In England. God, why do I remember that? I've erased SPG. So much of Thatcher's Britain from my memory, but no, I remember that.
Taking into a little hamster.
Now, is there anything else about Time that we need to talk about? Like, this is it's actually, you know, it's not a bad wee film, and you know, if somebody says let's go and see that, you probably will enjoy yourself.
Perfect date movie.
But it's not much to talk about, is there?
No, just go see it. Just take a date.
There's actually a good fair choice around at the moment, isn't there? It's quite a competitive time for a film like that to be coming out. When you've got Phillips, you've got Gravity, you've got About Time.
But they are very different in terms of what you'll experience.
Yeah, they are. But people make a decision. You know, they're not necessarily going to knock off all four. It's about convenience as well, isn't it?
Oh, totally. They're not as silly as we are.
No, they need to budget for all four, though.
I agree. I'd have to put Phillips at the top, though.
Yeah, Phillips is definitely at the top. But as we've been discovering over the last few weeks, the film releases come thick and fast. And if you do miss a week, then all of a sudden, you know, Thor's turned up, and you know you've got that to add to the mix about whether you're going to spend your $15, $16, $17, you know, with your $2 extra for your glasses or whatever on top, you know. And so it just gets harder and harder if you don't see those films in the first week to go back to them. So, you know, it's a challenge, and it's not going to change anytime soon. We're getting into the silly season, aren't we? If we look at your whiteboard here, we've got...
There's a bit going on.
There is. Oh, you've moved everything up. So I'm looking at the top. Into November, The Butler. The Counselor, which we've already talked about. I can't read your handwriting. What's that?
One Chance. Hunger Games.
Mud.
Enough Said, which I'm very much looking forward to. Yep. You know, so there's a lot happening, and that's just in November.
And then Upper Papa.
I know. I've got to write my Fishhead article for the December magazine tonight.
Upper Papa.
Yeah, well, it's going to be the number one, but I'm just not even sure what else is in December that I've seen that I can talk about. Anyway, yeah,
he's getting strong reps too, isn't he, for Philomena?
Yes, and he co-wrote it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is Steve Coogan.
He produced it too.
Wow, December is actually flanked by Steve Coogan.
The cougar is on the loose.
Right. Well.
We should probably wrap up this review since we're sort of segueing.
We should. And I've been avoiding coming up with two words for it because my two words have been so pitiful for the show so far. So, right.
Katie. Well, my two words for About Time, because it was so lovely and so sort of British, is tea and biscuits.
Oh, that's good. Look, well done.
Paddington beer.
Good piece of homework there. My two
Paddington
words.
Paddington beer, mate.
Yeah, Paddington Bear. You haven't seen it, but you know.
My two reviews, Paddington Bear.
Paddington Bear.
But you know what? Everybody will know what he's talking about. That's
he was
brilliant.
Awesome, Paddington Bear.
There's going to be a film of that. Did you not read that?
No.
There's a live-action movie about Paddington Bear with Colin Firth in
it. Oh, my goodness.
You're there, aren't you, already?
I like Paddington Bear and the Wombles.
Is Colin Firth going to be Paddington?
No, he's going to be... No. It'll be
Could
like
Garfield. Could
you imagine
Garfield. Him in, like, a bear suit?
Paddington Bear.
Jacket and the hat.
Coming,
please, Colin.
Coming dripping wet out of a lake.
Hello. I'm Paddington Bear.
My two words for About Time are about an hour and three quarters. That, ladies and gentlemen, is our show for this week, and not too long. So hopefully this one you'll be able to listen to in one single commute. Next week, Thor returns, along with a special interview that I did on Monday with Maggie Miles. She's one of the producers of the Tim Winton adaptation, The Turning, which opens...
7th of November.
So we'll be featuring that in next week's show. All of that, of course, and more in next week's exciting episode of New Zealand's favourite movie podcast, which we can say definitively, Cinematica. If you've enjoyed this episode, don't forget to click subscribe in iTunes or whatever podcasting software you choose. That way the latest episode is always downloaded automatically. Don't forget to leave us feedback at the iTunes store. Those ratings, reviews, always super useful to help more people discover the show and push us up the rankings. You can contact us via...
You can find us on Twitter via @CinematicaCast, on Facebook at facebook.com/CinematicaPodcast, on Letterboxd as Cinematica, where you can read our two-word reviews, and as always on our website at cinematica.co.nz.
This show is a Guns of Steel production. The theme music was 6x6 by Earl Van Dyke. You can buy that at the iTunes store. And we're leaving you with some more music. This is the instantly familiar, Spiegel im Spiegel by Arvo Pärt, the famous Finnish composer, as featured in Richard Curtis's About Time. It was also in the Gravity trailer, of course. And according to Wikipedia, Paolo Sorrentino's This Must Be the Place, Isabel Coixet's Elegy, it was in Dear Frankie, Touching the Void, Gus Van Sant's Jerry. So probably time to put it away, actually. Jean-Luc Godard's In Praise of Love, Tom Tykwer's Was Heaven, Guy Ritchie's Swept Away, which nobody saw, Mike Nichols' Wit. It probably is a little bit overused, but anyway, still very beautiful. Spiegel im Spiegel, that's it from me.
Good night from me.
And good night from me.